Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org. for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
All right. So again, I'm Ruth. I'm a compulsive overeater. Very glad to be here. Listen to a lot of podcasts from this meeting, so it's nice to see faces to go. And I go to a lot of LA meetings, even though I live in Cleveland, Ohio. So it's good to be with some familiar faces. I have been absent since October of 2020. I have been in program since January of 1996. And I will talk about some of the between there and here, relapses along the way, and I'll talk about that. I am down 60 pounds from my top weight. So I was a skinny kid, skinny enough that people were concerned, how do we get her to gain more weight? So there was a lot of emphasis on food and a high protein snack after I got home from school. It was a lot of focus on food in my household. My mother had not always been heavy, had always been told that she was heavy, was a big dieter. Snacks, we did not have snacks. Other kids had stuff on top of the refrigerator that they could eat when they wanted. We never had that stuff. Ooh, too dangerous. Watch out, food is risky stuff. I got uncomfortable with my body when I hit puberty, didn't know what to do with some curves. There weren't a lot of them. But in early adulthood, when I had, gained some weight, I knew all about dieting because I'd been around it and I could diet and lose weight, and that worked great. And that happened a couple of times in my life that I gained weight, upped my exercise, and lost the weight. And I used to do it. I lived in New York City for a long time. To get more exercise, I would just get off the subway further from work and walk some more. But I got to one autumn when I was unhappy with my size. I would try to diet. That would last 4 or 5 days. I would get discouraged and give up and decide, oh, I just needed to accept the size that I was. And then that would last a week or so, and I could not accept it. And I would try another diet. And I did a few rounds of that and just felt stuck. And somebody said to me, why don't you try Overeaters Anonymous? And maybe I had heard about it, but I didn't have much awareness. But I went to a meeting, and of course the people were a little strange because they are for a while. When you first start, that was certainly my experience. But I remember early on feeling ready to do something, and I asked somebody after the meeting, how do I start? And he said, can you make some boundaries around your food? And I knew sugar was a problem for me, so I was going to stop sugar. And my first meal plan was no sugar and no third helpings. That was some boundary around my food. And I developed over time, got more boundaries, one serving, found things besides sugar that I could not manage the quantity I would eat. And so I ruled some things out. Was always resistant to weighing and measuring. I remember talking to some fellows about, here's the container I carry my lunch in to work. And they said, oh, that's a form of weighing and measuring. And I thought, oh, no. No, I would not be as strict as weighing and measuring. And what happened was my food plan would deteriorate. And I would get to a point where I say, wow, I don't know if I'm abstinent. And then I would get to a point where I had to say, I am not abstinent. And so the first couple of those relapses, I didn't eat sugar, but ate pretty much everything else I wanted until I just got tired of how that felt. I never stopped going to meetings. I always went to meetings. I did not always have a sponsor. And I remember one relapse, I did start eating sugar. And I remember an afternoon, I was getting ready to go to a party that afternoon, and I felt the compulsive eating locomotive firing up. And I just thought, I cannot do this. And that resumed another abstinence, which was great. I was very, my regular meetings early on in program was in Brooklyn Heights, a beginner's meeting. They read the tools pamphlet every week. I really got to know the tools and worked those and found those very helpful. One of the things that I got out of early program was a journaling practice, which I had never sustained before. That was great. I learned a ton. I learned I could travel and not have vacations be about food. I learned that there were differences between what I needed and what I wanted. And having a food plan helped me with that. 18 years ago, I got a job in Cleveland, Ohio, and my spouse and I moved here. I connected with program. But I had a long period of, I would try sponsors, but not stick with them. I had a long time without sponsors. But again, I never quit going to meetings, but I would relapse again or get a mushy kind of food plan. And then also during this time, I had some health issues, a balance problem that started and got increasingly worse to the point that there was part of the day when I would feel not great in the morning, but better in the afternoon. I could drive in the afternoon. That got worse and worse over time, to the point where I really depended on a walker and just needed a lot of help with daily life. My spouse owns a business. She's very creative about using what people can do. And so I was able to work, but not to do the work that that I felt really called for and trained for. And then 2020 and the pandemic came and meetings started being on Zoom. I'd been dependent on people giving me rides to meetings when I couldn't drive, so I've been getting there. But when the Zoom meetings started, I thought, you know what, here's my chance to do 90 meetings in 90 days. I've never done that before. And so 90 meetings in 90 days, I put in my name what day number and what meeting number I was on and kept track. And it was how, that's how I got connected with some LA meetings. I love the Tuesday Wheel of Recovery. My home meeting is still in Cleveland Heights where I live, but connected with a lot of places. And during that, during that time, 2020 had some wonderful things for me, as awful as it was for the world. After many tries, I found a neurologist who really could help me with my balance problem. I got off a medication that I had been taking for years, and as soon as I started tapering off of that, I started feeling better. And I have, since fall of 2020, gotten my life back. I can drive. I am working in my vocation. I can do daily life things like stand up to cook meals. And so I haven't gotten back on a bicycle yet. But everything else I can do. But what also happened in that 90 meetings in 90 days is people were always talking about sponsors. And I had not had a consistent sponsor for a long time. I asked around a little bit, and then asked somebody here in Cleveland whose program I really admired. And she said yes. And she has been my sponsor since then. I had been in program for 24 years at that point, had never gotten past step five. My sponsor and I, we worked through the steps. I found out a lot about my higher power. While my work is in religion, I'm a lot more interested in practices than in beliefs. And OA, the dailiness of it, the doing the practices, doing the steps, you know, I don't really have to figure out the beliefs. I just have to do this stuff. One of my lessons early on in program in the 90s was coming to the belief that God cares about what I eat. Because I also believe that God wants our wholeness as individuals and community and with the planet. And my wholeness depends on my being abstinent to really be in it. And so I came to believe that God cares about what I eat. So God cares about the things I'm doing in daily life. I get up in the morning and get dressed and feed the dogs, but then also do some meditation. Not a huge chunk. I do a guided meditation for sometimes 6 or 8 minutes. What feels most important to me is not to skip 2 days in a row. So if I skip, I just return to it. After the meditation, I do a little devotional reading and some writing, which is part of my prayer time. I don't do a 10th step every day, but have that tool for me when I'm feeling resentments. I had a long time in the bumpy absent days when I would speak at meetings, but I never did a lead because I just didn't feel good about my program. And so I'm more willing to speak. I'm now sponsoring 2 people. Doing some other kinds of service. There's some South Carolina-based meetings that are among the ones I found. They do a great job on security. I trained with them to do security. I volunteered at some of their meetings. I've trained some of our Cleveland folks to do security. So that kind of service feels really good to me. So the daily practices are really important. So there are things that I learned from the very beginning in program about God caring about what I eat, about stuff like being able to travel and have things not be about food. My spouse is not in a 12-step program, but is very supportive of me. And so we can be someplace and I might just say, you know what? So we're at an event. And I can just say, you know what? If I were eating, I would not be able to connect with these people. That's something that came to me early. But what's different to me in this abstinence of now a little over 3 years and being with the program is being much more mindful about conscious contact with my higher power, about being aware of my part in things when I've got a resentment or a grievance, about looking for ways to serve. It's been part of my being, but what are the program ways to serve? Being able to do those things, to being able to, I was surprised when I became willing to sponsor. I thought that that people who take me up on that would be people that were new to program, and I'd help them get started. I felt super confident about that. Both of the people that I'm sponsoring now were already in program for a while. It's like, whoa, what do I do talking about steps 6 and 7 and beyond? Well, I have a sponsor. It's really important to me to be a sponsor who has a sponsor, who has a sponsor. And so I rely on the wisdom of other people about what I hear in meetings, but also just talking to my own sponsor about my own life. And what's going on, but also, wow, so this person I sponsor had a question. What do you think about that? So really rely on the wisdom of other people to give me guidance. With my current sponsor, I worked out a food plan. I weigh my protein. I measure my carbs. It's so freeing. it works for me. And it just makes life so much easier not to have to worry about that. My practice is I text my sponsor each morning about what I've eaten the day before. She's available to me other times, but we have a set time to speak once a week just to check in about what's going on. I've learned a lot about her and her program and her life and her family in that time. So grateful to her. And I do understand what she says when it helps her, when she says it helps her to be sponsoring, because it really helps me. I am powerless over food, and I get reminded about that from time to time. So I was on vacation in October, talking to my sponsor about, before I went, about what do I need to do. I chose not to take a scale and a measuring cup. I was on a vacation where I was eating out all of the time. And it was challenging at the beginning part of that. I just figured, well, 3 years of, 4 ounces of protein per meal, I'm going to know what to do. I feel like I made great choices. 3 years of measuring doesn't. Thanks for the time notice. Yeah, thanks. I still have to do it. My food mode is grazing. Thanksgiving, I ate some stuff when I was cleaning up. I'm powerless over food. And so I go to that. I tell my sponsor, that was a slip. Here's how I get back to it. We strategize about what to do on the next holiday. Like, yeah, maybe I need to drop into some meeting marathon on Thanksgiving or other holidays. So strategies about getting back on track. After vacation a year ago, I had portions that were bigger than I like. Talked to my sponsor about it. Decided to cut my carbs down by half. I thought that might be a deal. It wasn't. It turns out the amount, you know, the amount that I'd been eating was just a habit. I was not hungrier when I cut back. I just noticed that I wasn't. So helpful to be in a groove about a lot of things. And some of that is not helpful of, hey, I didn't need to eat quite that much and cut back. And I'm easier on that. You know, I found out I can't eat more than two fruits a day. That's too much. So some of it comes with experiment and feedback and trying out. I feel great about my shape these days. 68, I got saggy skin. I don't love that. But I'm content with where I am and happy with the program and very grateful to be with you all today. Thank you very much. All right, Deb B.
Thanks so much, Ruth. Is there, this is my big question that I ask about relationships and how recovery has changed your relationships with others, you know, family, your partner, however else that, yeah, would love to hear.
Yeah, so I think one thing that's changed is some clarity about my saying what I need. My mother has died a few years ago, but when I would be going to visit her, she'd say, well, what are you eating now? Because it was always different all my life growing up. So I know what I need. I just tell people I don't. But what happens with the food in its proper place is I'm able to focus with people and on the relationships. It has made me more likely to notice my resentments and be willing to address them. And so it's enhanced those. There are still people that bug me. I still do obnoxious things. But I'm a little more able to pay attention to people and engage. And, one of the big satisfactions in my life is being able to connect with people. And part of it is being around program. One of the, we're in this kind of laboratory of learning how to relate to each other, thanks to the traditions and our work in program. So what I practice in here, I guess, also get to live out in the rest of my life. Thanks. Bob M.
Thank you for your share. It was great, Ruth. Do you have a daily routine? And I think you kind of explained it, but can you go into detail with your daily routine?
Sure. Be glad to do that. A lot of the daily stuff are lined up in the morning, a few minutes of meditation, some devotional reading, some writing, which is prayer time, a check-in about 10th step and doing a written 10th step if I need to do it, turning over to my sponsor by text, the food that I've eaten, receiving comparable texts from the people that I sponsor. I go to at least three meetings a week. That works out the best for me, and sometimes go to more. When I was working the steps, that was primarily through the OA workbook, writing a little bit and turning that over with my sponsor. We spent some time after that with my reading and some writing on the big book. I'm a little more sporadic on that these days. So those are the daily markers for me. Thanks.
Ruth, I'll go ahead. Hi, I'm Frank S., and thank you for a wonderful share. Thanks for being here today. And I tend to ask questions about this because I'm always working on character defects. Tell me, what character defects are you surprised that have been taken away, or, as some of the people here say, the volume has been lowered on? And what are some other ones that you still have to work on, and you're surprised that they're still with you?
There are resentments that I'm still working on. My practice of, from the big book, when something's really up, I will think about a person, pray for that they have all of the things that they want, pray every day for a couple of weeks. Some resentments I've released. Some have softened, but are still with me. So those are still with me. I am more honest than I was. I remember, especially the first time I did a fourth step, I was surprised how dishonest I was. When I do something I regret, I cast about, surely there's somebody I can blame for this. This isn't me. Who else was responsible for this pickle I've gotten myself in? But I'm more willing to apologize. One big challenge for me is I am powerless over procrastination. And I'm really, really trying, especially in the last couple of weeks, really been thinking about that. How do I work on that in ways that have worked with other defects? And admitting I'm powerless and just trying to do incremental things is helping a little. But that one's a mountain. So thanks for asking, Frank. Ellie, I see your hand up.
Hi, Ruth. Thanks so much for your share. I wanted to ask you about your higher power in terms of, is it different or how it's evolved over the years from the beginning until now?
Thanks for asking. So I am more willing than I was a long time ago to attribute things to my higher power, changes in me. I have my spiritual life around program, my connection to my higher power waxes and wanes. Sometimes I feel real connected, sometimes, and it's sometimes been for years, have felt really distant. When I feel disconnected from program, I do a similar thing. When I feel disconnected from my higher power, what are the things I can do to be hanging out in the place where I do feel connected? So when I get grumpy about program, I try to add a meeting or two or make a phone call. When I feel disconnected from my higher power, I try to refocus on those daily practices. But, sometimes my writing is just, I don't feel like doing this. I'm doing it because I do it every day. I do it to get reconnected. And over time, then that tends to get a little bit easier. So I'd say, given more acknowledgement, more credit to my higher power, getting more in my body, what that connection is, really seeking out conscious contact. What helps me always has been being around other people. When I have trouble praying, you know what? I'm in a group of people and we say the Serenity Prayer together. That helps me so much. Sometimes other people have the words for prayers that I just can't voice. And so I connect with them. So I hope that's responsive to your question. Thanks.
Thank you.
I've put my phone number in the chat. I'm on Eastern time. Oops, no, I didn't put it in everybody's chat. About to do that again. All right, Ryan.
My question is, how does eating out look for you now compared to, you know, before abstinence, before your most recent, you know, strong abstinence?
What happens is a lot more preparation. So I work at a church. We have a dinner out once a month. I look at the menu ahead of time, figure out what the best things are for me to have, get sad about choices I'm not going to have, and think about what am I going to feel like if I make the choice that I think is the best choice for me? When my plate comes, I might look at, wow, how much of this am I going to eat? How much of this am I going to take home? I love leftovers, love taking stuff home. Once in a while we get takeout at home. I tend to put away some of it when I start. So more thought about what I'm doing. When I was on vacation, sometimes it was a matter of what's the best I could do. And just say, you know what, I don't need to have that. And try to manage the quantities. So those are the main things. Thanks. Melissa.
Hi there, Ruth. Thank you so much. That was just lovely. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of how you sponsor and what that journey has looked like for you? Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So the how of sponsoring, I've gained so much from the way that my sponsor works with me. So So that's the daily turning over of what I've eaten the day before for the food accountability. My sponsor and I don't have the same food plan. She's an Orthodox Jew. I'm not. She's okay with I'm a little self-conscious sometimes on, I ate shrimp yesterday, you know, or whatever it is. But anyway, so what I really like with the people I sponsor is daily contact. And there's a little ego thing in there, I know, but I just turn over your food to me. And, you know, I make myself available. I hope people take advantage of that. And one person does, one person's not as consistent. I want people to be conscious of the steps, working the steps in some way. If they've been through it, then going through some program, through some, you know, am I doing a workshop, doing something to focus on that? A check-in at least once, a direct check-in by phone once a week of what's going on, how's your food, what are the challenges for this week, what's getting in your way, is there something that you need to do to change your food plan, Are the other people in your life supportive of what you're doing? So looking for the dailiness of it, I'd say is the biggest thing with the support. What other tools, you know, just reminding them whether tools are available to you. And giving some feedback on what I hear. You know, I had somebody saying, well, I don't think I have resentments. I said, really? It sounds like I'm hearing a lot of grievances, you know, and just to say, to give some feedback in the most gentle way I can. And then if they've got a question, sometimes I have to say, I don't know the answer. Here's what I'm hearing, or here's a little bit from my experience that may pertain, and take it or leave it. That's really, I think, all I can do on that. I appreciate people being mindful of the tools and the steps and the program as a whole, and treating it as a program and not as a diet. So, thanks. I got a couple of minutes if somebody has a Michael.
Hi, Ruth. Hi, thank you for your service. So you said, I think you said you work with church, and somebody asked you about your higher power. And if you're not higher powered out already, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your connection with your higher power and what you think of about that.
Sure. So, so I'm a minister. It's challenging to preach at times when I do not feel connected to my higher power, and I have had to do that. And when that's the case, I just look at the text for the week and say, what does this story tell us about God? It's just this year that I've, after a bunch of years of not serving a church, have resumed in that. It has to needing to study texts every week, being able to say whatever I think about God has opened up such an immense depth in my own personal spiritual life. I passionately believe that God cares about our wholeness, the wholeness of us as individuals, as communities, and with the planet. And that we learn from each, that God loves us no matter what. And wants us to do well and be well and care for others. I think those are the big things that guide me. So thanks for asking. Okay. Thank you all very much.